Yes, Rebecca.
Okay. So first of all, I've never peed that much in my entire life. That was amazing. Second of all, wow. Second of all, catch me up. What you just did then, like.
I was just saying that, you know, we get drunk and ruin stuff that people love, and Emily ruins all of Western literature, and in doing so,
yeah,
ruins
that's the goal.
Ruins all of the erotic fantasies that we were raised to have as young women.
So we're going to talk about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Hi, I'm Maya Grant.
And I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the things that you love.
In this special mini-sode, we are going to talk to a very special guest whose job is also ruining stuff people love.
I know, we found a sister in arms. We found a fellow member of the coven, and we really had to talk to her. Emily Edwards hosts a podcast called Fuck Boys of Lit, which is like the greatest fucking name of all time, where she basically ruins all of the heroes from literature, from English literature that we love, like all of them systematically.
Yeah. Literature in English.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, and I just like, how did it take us so long to get together? I don't know, but here's our conversation with her. Emily Edwards, the host of Fuck Boys of Lit, which just even as a title, I mean, when yes. did that come to you? When did that come to you?
It's not my invention. I have to say, last year, the comedian Sarah Benincasa, who's been on my show, she did a Twitter question, you know, one of those big viral things of like, if you could murder any character from literature, who would you murder? And, you know, it's horribly off color, but I love it. And so I had said Jane Eyre because I hate her, like with a fiery passion. Do I hate the character of Jane Eyre? And I know that is just a deeply terrible thing to say. And all these people were like, well, how come not Rochester? And I was like, that's a whole different can of worms. And so I started discussing this with a bunch of people who are Victorianists on Twitter, thank God. And they just said, well, you really just need to do a podcast called Fuck Boys of Literature. And I was like, done. Next week, I launched
wow.
it. It was just like,
amazing. Wow.
So that's how it had to happen.
That's right.
And the woman who suggested it was actually my guest, Miranda Butler, for Middlemarch. And so we just got to discuss all the fuckboys of Middlemarch.
I feel like you are a sister in arms. I feel like we are very, very aligned.
Yeah,
I just
absolutely.
Really wanted to take a moment to ask you about what it has meant to destroy
Western lit?
All of our fantasies.
It's great.
Yeah. Yes. But also, what has it done to your own erotic life?
Yes.
Because, you know, like, I feel like one of the things that you're doing is you're saying, like, all of these heroes, all of these men who we've been raised to, like, fetishize and fantasize about, it's all fucked, guys. It's all fucked.
It's
your entire
so
sexual life that was, like, shaped by being young is, like, it's all wrong.
There is nothing more upsetting to me than when someone tweets at me and goes, yeah, but I still love Jane Eyre and Edward Rochester. And I'm like, who hurt you? Please.
Like, then I didn't do my job.
Exactly. It has absolutely made my job to like kill two books in particular, two main texts that I will die a happy woman if I can get people to stop realizing that they are romances. And they are Jane Eyre and Pride and Prejudice.
We're going to say that. Those are like my two fucking favorite books.
I know. I'm
fine.
Sorry.
Okay, go,
I'm very
fine.
Sorry. But like, Jane Eyre is my big one because I did a video about this yesterday where it's just like both St. John and Rochester are deeply, deeply terrible men. And so it's just...
No, he's an abuser. Rochester's an abuser. Like, that's fine. But that's why I like him.
St. John is an abuser. Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me about the fuckboys that you have, the fuckboys of literature that you feel like you have most solidly destroyed for people.
It's hard because I don't have any control over what my guests say. So like they will, most people will inevitably end up defending the character that they choose in a book because I don't assign the books, people choose. So, you know, it's hard doing something like Pride and Prejudice or Jane Eyre or things that people really hold as like totemic, like romance novels. And they'll say, but there's all these reasons why he behaved that way. And it's true. It's true. Like you cannot deny that Victorian era England was deeply fucked up and gendered and there are huge, huge problems. But I don't have a problem reading things through a solely modern lens because these things are taught to modern people and are still held up as, exactly. you know, deeply romantic figures. And so I think that a lot of people will still kind of say, but like, but Rochester or, oh, Darcy ended up changing in the end. And it's like, really? Did he? Because we can extrapolate. Oh,
but he had such a big, he had a really big house.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But I think it also goes back to that European fantasy of like, well, as long as I was the lady of the house, everything would be fantastic. And it's like, oh, it would be.
Right.
Right.
But
right.
it's not.
But it's not. Right. So what do you think are the biggest fetishes that you're realizing the impact of all these fuckboys have had on women? Because I feel like that's the thing. Like you, like these characters, and I think reading it through a modern lens is because, yeah, we're still, these are still the archetypes that we're basing rom-coms on.
Yeah. I think one of the things that still sticks around, and I will say that like, I always claim on my show that I was a really bad student, but like I worked in full time through college. So I just didn't read anything that I was assigned as a literature major. So now going back, I am reading these things as like a 35-year-old woman for the first time. And I'm saying like, oh, thank God I didn't have someone teach me this text because it maybe wouldn't have seen kind of through the veil. And so I think one of the problems is that a lot of the tones of like what women are supposed to do and be in relationships comes from these books. You're supposed to want to fix him. You're supposed to want to change him. You're supposed to, if you are good enough, or, you know, if you marry him, he'll be a better person. And that, you know, thankfully, I think we're starting to really finally break through that of just like, it's not your job to fix anybody. Like, you know, you don't have to put up with abuse or abusers because they're rich or they say they love you, you know? And I think that that's finally starting to come down a little bit. And that's just like, I really just want to drive it home.
So I want to know a little bit more specifics about the characters that you mentioned. Just look. Okay. Starting with Jane Eyre. Yes. Rochester locked his wife in the attic mm-hmm. and pretended she didn't exist because she was having emotions. Okay. Fine. That's a problem.
Well, also, and she's canonically in the text Creole and of mixed race.
Yes.
And she's, and which makes her crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right. Well, that's my point. She was a woman of color with emotions. So he locked her in the
yes.
attic.
Yeah.
She's the mad woman in the attic. Okay. That's problematic. But like, other than that.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? Like, exactly. It's hard to for me to be like, other than that. It's just something that it, as
enough.
Someone who's like, this is a character flaw that I have where it's like, if I create an opinion about something, it's really hard for me to change it. So like reading, you know, that section of the book where Rochester explains to Jane, like all of the reasons why it was justified for him to be deeply abusive to his first wife, like I can't get over that. You know what I mean?
Sure. I mean, I know you've heard all the arguments about he's a creature
sure.
of his time, and they didn't know about, you know, women's emotions then. But I'm trying to think about why I like Rochester so much as a character, and there was something that appealed to me very much as a teen. And also what you just said about not reading books really struck me because I was an English major too. I got my degree in English. I was like 1/100th of a GPA point away from graduating with honors too. But I never read a fucking book that they assigned
yeah.
me.
The point of being an English major is not to actually read the books. It's
you
to
don't
convince
read,
people
right.
you read the books.
Yeah. Exactly. I developed that skill. I'm very good at that. But I did read Jane Eyre. I read that one in high school. And I did read Pride and Prejudice because I actually enjoyed those books. And one of the things I liked about Jane Eyre, there was something about the brooding. It's not the fantasy that you can change him per se, but it's the idea of this unhappy man, this dark person who's alone in his dark castle, but you are just, the woman is just,
you're going to be so the shining beacon of hope for him.
Yeah, you're just going to pierce through that, and you're going to be the one thing he's going to actually care about.
I think there's also this thing where, and I'm sure this appealed to me, where it's like he sees her erotic potential.
Yes.
In a way that she didn't have it. No. I'm not saying this is good, but I'm saying this is where young women are often susceptible, is when people are like, oh, I see in you your erotic potential. And you're like, you see that in me? But I don't look like X, Y, and Z.
I actually don't know if that's...
I think that that's part of the appeal.
I don't know if that's supported by the text.
It is supported by the text. It is entirely supported by the text.
I
know that from chapter and verse.
He says he's attracted to her because she's childlike and small. It has nothing to do with eroticism.
It is erotic because it is this eroticism of her mind, of her weird paintings that she makes,
of her smallness and her petiteness and her frailty is erotic. It's eroticized.
Yeah.
Even her plainness. She is this unassuming tiny little thing, but there's something hot about that to him.
Yes.
And you don't think it's just a control fantasy? Like, one of the reasons why he doesn't end up with Blanche Ingram is because she is a voluptuous, rich woman who's the subject of other men's desires.
But it's because she's a bitch. And because Jane is smart. She thinks about things in an interesting, weird way. Like, I think that's...
Can I just say, he adopted that little French girl. That's a sign of good character. I mean, I know it was his daughter.
He was the illegitimate father of a little French girl, and he never claimed her formally.
Fair enough. But he didn't even have to take her in.
That's true. He could have left her in the sewers of Paris.
And he hired a governess for her.
I think what we are learning is that we are really inscribed by the novels that we read as young women.
Absolutely.
And I think this is why Fuckboys of Lit is so interesting, because you're saying, like, these are the things that give us the fantasy. Yeah. What happens when we take that fantasy apart? And I think what you're saying is all of your guests end up being like, I can't get rid of my fantasy.
There's almost always a moment, because again, like, I don't assign the books. Like, I have a running list of texts that people can like choose from or like use as a jumping off point, but I never assign. And I always love to see what people, you know, volunteer as the text that they want to choose. And so it almost always ends with someone going like, but I still love this book. And it's like, I'm not necessarily hoping to destroy your love for the books that you have read and, you know, have affection for. I just really hope we can get people to like parse through the marketing of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes. Of course.
Yes. Yes. What? I'm looking at your list right now.
Okay.
I'm looking at your list right now.
What's making you say
Portnoy's Complaint? Mm-hmm. Portnoy's Complaint is on there. Oh shit.
Oh, that struck a chord, huh?
Oh, it did strike a chord. But I think that that's like,
there are a bunch of texts that go hand in hand with their author. And I don't think you can separate Portnoy obviously from Philip Roth, and Philip Roth was
not at all.
He was.
But I think that it's like we have all of these novels in which these women are finding control however they can, or finding some kind of power however they can. And I think that a lot of those books, inscribe the whole romance novel mm-hmm. industry. Like all romance novels sort of rewrite this plot over and over. A spunky young woman mm-hmm. who encounters a rich man who's so powerful, but she finds the vulnerability in him, and then he empowers her with money. It's, yeah, it's a dynamic that's super, super fucked up. And I've been thinking about this a lot, how like a lot of the Epstein stories and a lot of the like R. Kelly stories, like a lot of these stories of serial abuses, I feel like are so dependent mm-hmm. on the princess fantasy.
Yeah, the Cinderella brought fantasy. Up
by, yeah, the Cinderella fantasy.
Yeah, I think that that's done on purpose, because I don't think that there is or has been until fairly recently an investment in undoing that. And, you know, obviously the publishing industry is still predominantly rich, white, and even male. Like the people who get published are predominantly rich, white, and male. And what's upheld as a classic, it's funny that we've been discussing two books that were written by women in a time where women weren't supposed to be published, but everything else that's a classic is rich, white, and male. And so I just don't think, especially when you consider your education, especially middle school and high school, in what is considered classic Western literature, they choose the books for a reason. Very rarely yes. are you served counterculture. The most counterculture you'll be served is Jane Austen and the Bronte sisters, which are really not, they are counterculture to an extent because they are books focused on girls and girls finding some semblance of empowerment, but it is through marriage. It is through marriage and babies and the socially acceptable routes to power. And so I...
Well, yeah. I mean, with Jane, it's her inheritance.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really the big moment. A guy dies that she didn't know about and
exactly.
like gives bunch of money, and all of a sudden she can like go back to her lover and know that she's not just going to be turned into
a little
puppet.
And the most
puppet.
Interesting thing about that is that she gives her entire fortune away to St. John. It's just, she says, like, now that I have this power over someone, I give it away.
No, she gives it to her cousins as well, to her female
cousins,
to
female
Diana.
Cousins. That's
and like,
true.
Yeah, yeah, that's
but
it's
the
not
bulk
just
of it
him.
Is going to the missionary.
No, it's divided into four equally. It's 20. She inherits
you're right,
20,000
you're right.
pounds,
I'm,
and each yeah. of the cousins gets 5. I do remember okay. this. I've read the book a few times.
Jane Austen is very explicitly commenting on that. Like,
she is.
Her books are not just fantasies of Cinderella stories.
They are social commentary through and through.
So they're like yeah. social satire. They're social
yes,
satire.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. She is yeah. meaning to make fun of the people that she writes the books about, by and large. I think that might have gotten lost a little bit in our understanding of Jane Austen.
That's fair.
Also,
that's
the people
fair.
Who consumed Jane Austen were the people she was making fun of. And there was a certain amount of pulling the teeth out of the bite that she was giving when they're like, ha ha ha, isn't it funny that we do this? We're going to continue, but it's so funny that she noticed this about us. And then because it was consumed by the upper class, it was suddenly became, you know, classic literature. And then I think a lot of her social satire, the understanding of her satire was lost for a good chunk of time. I think people are starting to realize it again more, and that like the echelons of wealth that she's talking about were not common, if right. not entirely fantasy.
And that all the romances are colored by, they're inflected by financial exigencies.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely.
So many of her books are about women who have to get married to survive or to live well.
I'm just reminded of, we did this one episode about procedurals mm-hmm. and how the weird ways that when Sex and the City started, it was like a social satire. It was like a procedural mm-hmm. on dating. Huh. And then to keep the seasons going, they had to turn it into a melodrama.
Right.
Instead of this thing that was sort of sardonic, it ends up like reifying the thing that it's supposed to be satirizing. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the inheritors of, like, if you look at like Bridget Jones or like whatever, any of the things that are sort of based on this fantasy. It's like you're in this social satire, but it has a happy ending.
Yeah.
That's a love happy ending. And so you end up focusing on the love happy ending and the love story, as opposed to the social satire that's saying like, this is fucked up, guys. This is super fucked up.
And also, I'm not entirely sure if something like Pride and Prejudice, you know, it's always saying like, these women have to marry in order to survive. Like, they don't. They have to marry in order to not be poor.
Yeah.
And that's a difference.
That's true.
And with something like Bridget Jones, you don't have the same threat of like, she doesn't have to marry her, you know, Mr. Darcy analog in order to not be poor. She has a job. She's, you know, a self-sustained woman of social standing, where, and also social standing doesn't matter as much in the world that they're portraying.
Not in the same way.
Not in the same way. And so like a lot of Jane Austen's books, Northanger Abbey as well, it's like, it's a lot of the phantom and the specter of being poor, and therefore you might as well be dead, you know? And it's just...
Mm-hmm. Sense and Sensibility.
Emma too. Like, they're all these hyper wealthy people that the worst thing in the world that they could imagine is not maintaining social class, if not even climbing social class.
Well, but then I feel like this is coming to something that I think I've been thinking about, that we've all been thinking about a lot, is that part of this is like, these are the fuckboys of lit. Mm-hmm. And then part of this is that like, it's an interrogation of what it means to be a white lady.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have been criticized a couple times for not having more books that are about people of color on my show. And I'm just like, first of all, I am a white, raised Catholic, cishet woman. Like, I have no business criticizing the social behavior of people who are societally not of my echelon. Like, I'm second in command is what I always say. Like, I'm just not male. Like, that's the only benefit that I don't have. And so like, I can't discuss the behaviors of the social behaviors and habits of not white people. And then also like, European literature is just super fucked up. Like, it's just super fucked up. There's no two ways about it. Like, white lady problems and white boy problems are just... God, there's just so much there that you're never going to stop mining it. Like, why would I want to take down non-Western lit when all of Western lit is just looking you right in the face?
It's right there for you. So I was almost going to ask, like, well, then are you okay criticizing Heathcliff? But then, of course, it's written by a white woman, so it doesn't count, really.
Yeah. And there's a certain things that the Brontes did where, if you do a close read, there are a lot of people who don't even realize that Bertha Mason is a woman of color. Like, they're just like, no, she's just got frizzy hair. And it's like, no, like, you have to get pretty into the text in order to realize that he's discussing the fact that his wife is, and she's one of the more blatant ones. And so I think there's also a lot of dedication to glossing over the representation of people of color in especially Victorian era literature, where they're just like, no, we're just going to say they're tan, you know, or like they're Italian. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Right. No, you're just like erasing all of the people of color.
Mm-hmm. But also then there's part of it that's like Catholics. Like,
oh, God,
have you read Villette?
I limit the amount of Bronte that I read because I can only handle much stress.
It's really, it's crazy. It's like a crazy book. I've only read it for the first time this year and it's nuts. First, it's really about a woman with clinical depression, which maybe you're
close
like, it's
a
Bronte.
Exactly.
What's so new?
I am shocked.
She ends up falling in love with this guy, with this Frenchman who's a Catholic. And there's something so like, oh, but he's Catholic. It's just so like, the othering is really something.
I absolutely love the vilification of Catholics. I find it so entertaining because it's just like a step away. It's like, it's shorthand. It's English shorthand for like the worst possible other. And it's just so goddamn funny to me. And then I one of the things I want to talk about on my show that I actually haven't yet is just how deeply offensive it is that, like, when you think of classic literature and, like, the one Black guy in classic literature, you think of Othello and he's always played by a white guy in blackface. And you're just like,
right.
What the hell am I supposed to do with this?
Like, and he murders a white woman.
And he murders a white woman.
Yeah.
And
everybody hates her because she is sleeping with a Black guy. And it's just like, God, this is the most offensive encapsulation of every problem that Europe has, just in one really good but terrifying play.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
And people are like, how come your, like, anxiety is up all the time? And I'm like, well, let me tell you.
This is why you shouldn't read books. This is what I keep saying.
Yeah,
exactly. Stop reading books, people.
Well, I don't know. I feel like our show, I feel like it helps. It helps me to have a place to take the rage and have people listen to it. But I just want to thank you for coming on. And I want to just, I feel like the coven of women who are trying to ruin things, I feel very grateful for its for its increasing size, to find somebody else who's just ruining the things people love. It's really important.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah. I am always happy to find other people who are dedicated to this alongside me. And name your books, you guys.
Project.
Name your books and I'll have
Oh my God. Look, I saw Portnoy's complaint on there. I was like, oh shit. Oh shit. It's about to go down.
I haven't read it since college. So
the Jews, we're going to get into it. It's going to be something.
That is going to be a text where I'm going to be like, I was raised Catholic. I don't know what this is.
I will say plenty of offensive things about Jewish boys and I will feel completely allowed to do so. I will have no shame doing so.
Let's make this happen.
Absolutely. All right.
All right, Emily. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Oh, that was amazing.
Thank you, Emily, for coming on.
She is one of us. She is.
Yes.
On the wavelength.
One of us. One of us. Go listen to her podcast, Fuck Boys of Lit. We're making this larger pool of people who ruin things that people love. And it might tell you something about your own sexual fantasies that you don't want to really know about. And that's just too bad, guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're all about, is facing the shit in the shit you love.
Facing the shit. All right, guys.
As always, reach out to us. Tell us about your favorite fuckboys of literature. And anything else you might like us to ruin, you can reach us via email. We are saucepodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to visit our Patreon at patreon.com/saucepodcast.
And if you just want to email me and tell me about your college fuckboy who you ended up dating because of how he reminded you of a fuckboy of literature, you can just totally email me, MayaGarance@gmail.com. You find me at MayaGarance, anywhere you're looking for MayaGarances. Just be real. Just like, I'm ready to hear the story about how fuckboys of literature have actually impacted your sexual life.
Just assuming that everyone has that, because it's true. Because you know it's true. Like, every single...
You know it's true. Come on.
Everyone listening is just like, I know exactly which guy you're talking about.
Which one do you want to hear about? Because I got 17 of them. Yeah, come on.
Exactly. You can also reach out to me. I am GynoStar on all the various platforms. And we'll be back soon with a new episode ruining more shit. Adios, amoebas.